We have pulled back the veil of time and space. Traveled beyond the ethereal confines of our dimensions to bring you the lost episode of Webcomics Weekly. This was recorded in the past. We're reaching back in time to bring it to the present, unless you're listening to this a week from now, in which case it's the past again. So it's twice the past. Time. Time travel. Webcomics.
Tried Coca-Cola in a glass bottle that had been bottled in Mexico. That was made with
natural sugar.
Real sugar, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Tummy hurts.
But it's delicious, though, isn't it?
I don't know. It's hard to describe. I think my mistake was not pouring it over ice. I think it was too much for this corn syrup fed boy.
It is.
I do. But of the two, I prefer it a lot.
I love true sugar-based drinks. There's a few on the market that market themselves as true sugar, sugar cane or whatever.
And it's keeping me going.
If you ever get Coke up in Canada, I think it's sugar cane, isn't it? It's not corn syrup?
I don't know.
It's really only because Archer Daniels Midland has the corn syrup market wrapped up in the U.S. that Coke went to corn syrup.
Is that right?
They own everybody, old Archer Daniels Midland. All right, so.
That's a lot like webcomics.
And that's what brings us to webcomics.
Webcomics Weekly.
Talking about major agricultural firms and you, Archer Daniels Midland, here we go.
And webcomics.
Supermarket,
every week.
Supermarket to the world. Here we go. Webcomics Weekly.
I am your host, Scott Kurtz. Why did I say that? It just is natural. That's what you say when you introduce a podcast. I think we should all say that we're the host. I'm your host, Scott Kurtz. I do a comic strip called PvP. You can find that at pvponline.com.
And I'm Brad Geiger. I do Evil Incorporated at evil-comic.com.
And I'm Dave Kellett. I do Sheldon at evil-comic.com. And I also do Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com. I'm just being a jerk. And tonight's drink of choice for me, PG Tips, one of the finest teas, low-budget teas out of England. I love PG Tips.
Oh.
A delicious tea. And apparently also Nutter Butters, as I look over on my desk and there's like five Nutter Butters right here.
Oh, Nutter Butters.
So I'm Nutter Buttering it up. So good job, Waistline. Good job, Waistline.
That's good. So, webcomics.
And we're short Kryptonite, which means we're short on one laughter. Short on one.
Chris is in a new apartment loft with no internet until tomorrow. A loft.
You know
a
what?
Loft.
I, you
he
know
is
what?
Officially an artist now, isn't he?
Either that or he's Remington Steele. Because I remember that was the cool thing about Remington Steele is that they lived in a loft apartment. Or was that Laura Holt? Was Laura Holt had a loft?
You know, I never actually watched Remington Steele.
Oh, Dave Kellett, buy yourself some DVDs,
man. I do remember the theme song, though.
Do you? Can you name it? Can you sing it?
No, but if I were to hear it, I could remember it. Yeah, there we go. Yep.
That's when he walked into my life with those cool blue eyes and that. Oh, sorry.
But here's what
I never.
Mean.
I don't even really know his real name. Okay.
Only in Texas, though, could you move into a loft and not be able to steal Wi-Fi from somebody else. Because in every major apartment or loft structure I've ever walked into, the first thing you can do is be like, oh, 19 free Wi-Fi signals. Great. Good job.
Okay.
We're pretty
tech-savvy in Dallas.
I was gonna say,
we got that locked down.
Everybody's up on dial-up. It's like you just hear modems firing all over the loft building. Ma, come on, check it out. I got that there internet fired up. Hold on, let me get on my AOL
you
account.
You got mail.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what Texas is like. Yep. Ding dong, ding lang do. Can't wait to move out of here.
All right. right, so who wants to start off with the first question? Brad, you want to? We're going to start off with a question about conventions. Shall we dive? You might have had
yeah.
that one. You have it lying around.
Yeah, Mike Schlosky.
Love his sandwiches.
Well, he does a comic that's as good as his sandwiches called Mikey's Life, MikeysLife.com. And he said the subject line is to con or not to con. He says, I've had my comic going for 2 months.
Goodness gracious, okay. I apologize for that. Sorry.
Bring it up. I've had my comic going for a few months now. I've been focusing mainly on putting out a good strip every update and not worrying too much about numbers. Now that I have proven to myself that I can do this and finally feel that my comic is objectively good, I find myself wanting to focus on marketing, finding more readers, and eventually monetizing. I'm doing some marketing things, Project Wonderful Ads, Tumblr, etc. I'm planning on selling original artwork. I would also like to do some merchandising, but I've been thinking a lot about conventions for next year. I figure that I should start planning for that now. I know that no matter what I do, I will probably be operating at a loss going to any conventions in 2009. I am comfortable with making an investment in my strips, and I think I could swing a couple of cons next year, paying out of pocket as long as I could gain some exposure for my strip, some new readers, maybe network, develop good relationships, etc. So my question is, can a convention appearance improve the readership of a relatively unknown creator, assuming they have an artist at the table, some flyers and T-shirts, maybe a mini comic, don't laugh, and a strip that they think people would like if they knew about it?
Improve readership? I would say no. Right?
Yeah,
I
would agree with you, Scott. I think my first reaction would be no. You'd get 10.
No.
You'd get 10 to 150, I would guess, at best, new readers.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know what, maybe if you have 150 readers and the cost of exhibiting is so low that it's worthwhile, maybe that's worth it to you. I don't know.
My first, let's go around the table and discuss our first con experience / public appearance experience.
Okay.
Because mine was actually a signing at a comic book shop.
Oh.
I was asked to sign at a local comic book shop, and we had that was actually a really good turnout. My wife actually surprised me with a cake, and everyone in line got a piece of cake.
Nice.
But it was after there was PvP had been out in comic book form too for a little bit, and I had something to sign. But there are, I think, opportunities to have public appearances and get out there and meet your fan base that aren't as expensive as, say, traveling cross state to a con.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think if you're looking for readers, that's probably a bad way to do it. That's not why you go to cons anyways, to get new readers, right?
Well, I think you could a little bit. But I think it's best if you're going to go to a convention and you're going to put that money out there, you've got to at least have something to sell. That's your first step. You've got to have something significant to sell, like your first book. If you don't have something like that and you're just offering mini comics and buttons and cheap stuff like that, you're really doing yourself a disservice. And I'll tell you why. You might have just one chance to kind of make an impression on a would-be new reader. And if your first impression is kind of chintzy, then you're not going to be able – you've got to make that ground back next year. Whereas if you wait until you have a really nice book to put out there, maybe a little bit of money to sink into some vertical banner stands and stuff like that, a good presentation, then you're going to have a lot bigger impact on your neutral readers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So but even at that point, I think you can pick up new readers. I think you can promote. But if you're only going there to promote, I think you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, I would agree with that, with what both of you said completely. I think the cost of return for you is going to be so just to put it a different way from what Brad said, that there's the investment for you maybe even buying let's say an Artist Alley table at a small size con would cost you, I don't know, guys, what do you think, $500 for a small size artist table or $300 for a small size artist table?
I think it's cheaper than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I could probably get away with it for between 150 and 300, depending on the size of the convention.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, I think that'll buy you an awful lot of Project Wonderful ads on small sites if you buy that wisely. And I think you might end up with just as much, if not more, gathered audience around your site from a some sort of Project Wonderful campaign or promotional campaign. So I don't know that a convention is worth it in that respect. But I'm glad, Scott, actually, that you mentioned the signing that you had at a comic book shop, because I completely forgot that my first two sort of appearances, for lack of a better phrase, were not conventions. Because I had sort of a trial by fire, and my first convention was, I think, in 99 or 2000. And it was San Diego Comic-Con. I'd never been to anything before that. And I exhibited there with Keenspot, I think. But before that, though, when I was still in college, I had a daily strip running in my newspaper at school. And my senior year, I took my life savings and I self-published a book in Indiana, of all places, at like a local printer shop, which was still a pretty viable concern of a printer shop. I mean, the guy knew what he was doing. So I did two signings at the school, and it was actually pretty cool to start in that respect and not start at a convention. So I think, for what it's worth, if you can finagle something either at a comic book shop, a locally owned or independent bookstore, or even some appearance that it's some way tangentially related to your strip. Like if you have a strip about parakeets, if you can find some parakeet, you know, meetup or something, it might be a fun place to do an appearance. So I think we've said similar advice before, but maybe think about starting smaller than a convention.
But there's also a benefit to cons. The benefits to cons, we said not gaining readers, but there are other benefits, I think, to getting yourself an Artist Alley table and doing that first con, maybe starting locally or something where you can – is in driving distance. And that is spending the weekend with like-minded individuals and meeting other artists and creative types that might really, you know, fire you up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's –
But you don't need an Artist Alley table to do that. You could do that just as an attendee.
Yeah, but I agree, but it's not – I don't think it's the same. I don't think it's the same as actually setting it up and going it yourself.
Yeah.
That's true. I see what you're saying.
I mean, I think that to do it on a regular basis is probably bad advice at first. But if you're going to – do it once or twice, or you want to, you know, give it a shot, well, I mean, especially if you're wondering if it's time – I think you can do it and have it not be, just a financially breaking experience, and then you'll get a good idea of how, you know, what kind of response you get.
Right. You're saying maybe if you're really eager to do this, maybe find a small convention within driving distance that isn't going to break the bank.
I think the investment's cheap enough.
Yeah.
To where if you know it's going to be a cost and then you can also meet new people that do comics, it might be worth it. I know that my first show was like that for me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell you if I made any money that first show. I probably didn't, but I remember it being a good time.
But it's I think some helpful advice too when you're starting out is to know that it's really hard to get people to plunk down money on your strip even when they know it. So if you're going if you're going with no or very little audience, you can't beat yourself up too much with those first few that you go to if there's no sales. However, you have to become very good. It's almost like a secondary personality, like it's sort of an out-of-body experience. You have to think to yourself, okay, I presented my best material. Are people really not digging this? And what does it say about in broader strokes about my strip? So there is actually a learning lesson to be had about presenting at a convention and seeing how people respond to it. Because very often, if you get a broad enough sampling, it's similar to how people are viewing your work online. Like if everybody comes up to you and goes, I don't get it. What's the cat doing? Why has he got a spacesuit on? And everybody goes, oh, I don't know. It's something about dragons. Why do the dragons all have stripes on? You know, like if you keep getting the same critique, maybe that's something you wanted to keep in mind. Not to change necessarily, but just to see – how could I better be communicating this? Or how is the general audience not seeing that? Or, you know, there's actually good sort of quick and easy surveys to be had at conventions.
Mm-hmm. And here's another angle on that. Speaking about my first convention appearance, My first convention appearance was with a group of other cartoonists that we went together on a booth at the Pittsburgh Comic Con. And, you know, we all kind of chipped in, got it to, you know, it was an affordable convention for us at that point. We chipped in, shared booth space, and that was kind of a big camaraderie thing too. You know, then you've got kind of your support group standing right there with you. So, you know, if you're pitching and missing, you don't feel like quite such a loser. You know, you got your buddies there backing you up. Everybody's being a wingman for one another. And that was a really good way to do a first convention.
Yeah, and you know what? One other bit of advice I would say as far as serving is, and you guys might disagree with this, but if it's local or if it's because I didn't do this, and I would recommend this to people to do because of the failings that I had with it, is don't exhibit for your first time at a con. And this might sound like basic advice, but I did not follow it. Be an attendee for a year or two, or drive around to the few within 100, 150 miles of your house and maybe check them out. And barring that, maybe go on Flickr and type in, you know, Wizard World Chicago 2007 and see what the photos look like and see if it's an audience that would match your strip, especially if you're doing some of the smaller, lesser-known cons. And it's helpful to know what you're facing the year before if you've checked it out, or barring that, you've looked at it on Flickr or looked at it on, you know, combined Google image searches and seeing what the comic is like.
Hmm.
Because if you're exhibiting at Small Press Expo, it's a very different experience than if you're exhibiting at San Diego Comic-Con, and you need to know what the sort of expectations are, you know?
Well, I mean, obviously, right? Come on.
No, not obviously. Before I went to SPX, it never occurred to me to Flickr it, and it never would have occurred to me that it's just a bunch of tables. It looks more like a swap meet than it does what I would consider to be a convention.
Yeah.
That being said, it's a great convention, and I sold like mad there, and I love SPX, but it was not at all what I expected it to be. It was it looked like some sort of college, hey, sign up for the Glee Club.
It does. You know, it has that feel.
You know that feel of that first week of freshman O when they've got all those tables out and they're like, hey, you want to join the rugby team? Oh, hey, how do you feel about communism? Hey, come on over here and join, you know. And it's a bunch of tables. And that's what SPX feels like. And I didn't know that. And so, like, let's just say, hypothetically, had I traveled with all of my big convention stuff, all the signage and all that sort of stuff, I would have felt like a chump, you know, because I would have been expecting booths. Right. And I, you know, you end up with these little rinky-dink fold-up tables. So.
And Mocha's a convention that's very similar to SPX in feel and in the stuff that people tend to exhibit there, too. There's
exactly.
Two of them just like that.
Yeah, and then if you want to feel like you've really wasted money, go to a Wizard World convention. Those are
no.
You know what? I hate to be the odd man out here, but I got to stand up for Wizard World in that I've always had a really good showing at Wizard World Philadelphia.
Well,
and part of that obviously is because I'm not putting up a hotel room, I'm not doing all that stuff. But I got to say, I've always done well.
No, Brad, I got to tell you, Dave Malky and I, Malky of Wondermark, and I did Wizard World LA, and there was no hotel rooms. It was just me and maybe 20 minutes of a drive across LA. And I by the time that weekend was up, I was like, "Bah, never doing a Wizard World show again." I don't know what it is about them, but you can just feel
they don't care. They're horrible, horrible, horrible people that don't care at all about the people that they're there.
Yeah, you can feel that there is no love. Actually, you know what? You're right.
No, if you are
not, I'm not kidding about that.
I am telling you. Let me tell you 100%. I mean, this is almost a mission statement. If you are not Kevin Smith or Joss Whedon or whoever is their headliner guest, they could give two shits about you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Period. That's it.
And I think Malky and I fell into that category.
That's it. They got your money and they don't care. I went to Wizard World, Texas, this last one, last November, to pick up boxes, okay? Because a customer of mine, a comic book shop that was selling some stuff for subscription for me, he had extra stuff and you know, he lives in Iowa and I'm here in Texas, and he said he was going to be there. Walked up, bought a ticket, didn't want any freebies from these guys, bought a ticket to get in, and was waiting for the doors to open, and the guy that runs the con, one of their high muckety mucks, I can't remember his name, but it was the day that the Cowboys were playing the Redskins, which is a pretty big rivalry, and he's in Dallas. right? He's throwing a con in Dallas. And, of course, they're all from New York, so they're from that northeast area. And just before the doors open, he starts screaming, "Go Redskins! Go Redskins!" and clapping his hands. "Ha, ha, 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 go Redskins."
How quickly was he shot?
He wasn't shot, but everyone just kind of looked at him like, "What? What's your deal? Like, you just took our money, and you know."
Yeah, just like a lack of couth, and at least a lack of awareness of these people are doing business with you, you know.
Yeah. No, I do not like those guys. I mean, the convention people. I don't know what they're like at the actual.
But my two other last bits of advice for conventions, and then I'll leave it to you guys, is one, I think actually Brad wrote up a wonderful summary on conventions in the book, and that's not we certainly don't need to sell more. Go to your library and pick up a copy. But Brad's summary is his chapter, I think it's 10 or 11, is a wonderful summary on conventions and mind frame and how you get into that mode. And then also I would say, especially your first few conventions, really control your costs, because there's a high likelihood that you can make nothing at your first conventions. So really be tight on expenditures. Because I've seen people been doing it 6 months, going to spend $200 on my signs, going to spend $300 on my flyers, going to spend $400 making up these mini comics, and then at the end of the con, you can see it on their face. They're just like, "Oh God, what have I done? What have I?" You know, it's almost like they've blown the house at Vegas, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, everybody's all excited to go out and do a convention and to present your work out there and stuff like that, and it's easy to kind of all of a sudden get in over your head.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's I'd like Mike to write us back when he does do his first convention and let us know how it went, because I'm interested to find out which of the advice that we gave him he ended up following and how it worked out for him.
Yeah.
So Mike, write it and let us know how it goes when you do decide to do your first convention.
Whew, you're breaking up a lot there, Brad. Was that just
Am I really? I notice there's a lot of pauses after I get done talking. I get this feeling like I said something wrong every time.
No, you didn't say anything wrong. You just broke up a little bit. That's all.
Oh, okay.
What's great is it's very Max Headroom of you. So it's like I'm looking forward to Mike emailing us back and telling us how his first convention went.
Convention. Yep.
All right, next podcast question. So
drink
here,
Coke.
This is a good follow-up question, I think, to conventions, because it sort of has a follow-up to the thing that I was talking about before about sort of getting a read on your audience and how they're reacting. So here's a question from J.G. Brin, and his website is crownprince.bubonicpress.com. Good, easy to remember, not a lot of letters there.
Wow.
GoDaddy.com. So J.G. Brin, crownprince.bubonicpress.com. Redirect will cost you $8, J.G. I know we always say that sarcastically, but it does cost you $8. Buy a redirect. All right, so two questions for Webcomics Weekly we're going to ask. His first one, is it important to know the demographics of your readership, i.e. the age, the gender, the nationality? And if so, how can you find that out? So I shall leave that up to you, Scott. Is it important to know the demographics of your readership? And if so, how do you find that out?
It is important to know the demographics of your readership for a couple of reasons. First of all, advertisers really like to know this information. So it's not bad to have it. Second, it can also possibly, I guess, help you glean a little better what you might want to put in your store. You know, for example, especially if you find out you have more girls reading your strip than boys, that kind of thing. And the best way to do it, I've always found, is to offer a survey. And excuse me, hold on, Mike. Just getting over my sickness. But there's a couple places you can do it. I'm sure there's a ton of online free online services let you do this. What am I trying to say? If someone's really smart, you can program this pretty easy, right? A survey, a simple survey?
Yeah, I think SurveyMonkey is a nice one, if I remember correctly.
SurveyMonkey is what I use, but you have to be very careful about SurveyMonkey because it is free up to a certain number of surveys taken, so make sure you cap it to that, because if you just leave it open and you end up with more people taking the survey than what they allow for free, you get charged. That did happen to me.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So be careful about that. What did you say? Did you just find that, Bill? Yeah. Angie is just now talking to me because we're doing belated tax stuff, and she's like, oh, is that what SurveyMonkey is? Because she found those charges.
is that why we had to skip out on the mortgage payment that month? All right.
This probably is not as big of an issue for people who don't have larger readerships, but I was not paying attention, and I was charged $250.
Ooh.
Mm.
250 smackers because I left that survey up for too long. So, yeah. But SurveyMonkey is free if you use it properly. And I was like, I asked who. I said, God, how do you afford the SurveyMonkey thing? It's we got pop for $250. And he says, oh, well, we always only take as much as is free. And I'm like, oh, cool. Information you could have given me 2 days ago before I did this. But yeah, that's my advice. It's definitely an online survey.
Now, when this reader writes, is it important to know the demographics of your audience? Do you think that he means in terms of a web businessman, or do you think he means in terms of a cartoonist?
Mm.
Well, see, that's why my initial reaction was, you want to be a little wary of knowing it, because my gut thought is, at least at the outset, you want to be writing and creating from the heart, and you don't want to immediately go into the hack thing of, well, I know I got a lot of moms in my audience, so guess what's going to happen? Three little tykes are going to come into my strip, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's just it. And if you kind of write that way, especially from the get-go, you can end up really doing some stuff that, you know, it isn't best for your strip.
Yeah, and so that was my concern. I mean, I see Scott's, and Scott's completely right. If you're, especially if you're selling advertising, you need to know the demographics. And if you're going to be doing like T-shirts, you need to know, hey, am I 70% female? Am I 30% male? Well, then that changes significantly the type of shirts I'm going to do, or, you know, the type of plushes I'm going to offer. I think if you're looking at it from a creative standpoint, you just want to be careful. And I'm not saying you don't want to know it. I'm just saying you want to be careful about how that might impact your creativity.
I think you do want to know it. I mean, we were talking to Scott Sava this weekend about it, and he said he discovered that most of his readership was young girls.
That's right. He did say that, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I was actually kind of surprised by that, weren't you guys? But it made sense once he said it.
Yeah, it did make total sense once he said it. But
when did he discover that? Because that was before I got there. Had he discovered that after he had been doing his strip for a while?
And after he had been doing it as a comic book for a year or so, and then brought it online.
See, that's just it. I think I would want my work to mature a little bit before I let stuff like that play into the creative process. You know, I think if you're just doing a comic for the first couple of years or so, it's not as important to know your demographics. You're not going to be selling ads particularly at that point, and your work is still maturing. After that point, when your work has kind of taken root, and you're starting to think about selling ads, yeah, now it's important for you to start working into your polls and maybe be surprised at what you see and in terms of who's responding to it.
Yeah.
Well, can I
but
be honest with you? Can
while,
I be honest?
I think it's more important to work on your time.
Can I be
your creative mature?
Can I be honest with you now that I've heard both of you talk? Then clearly I'm failing because I have never taken a demographic survey of my strip, and now I'm wondering why am I so lame? And clearly,
just put up a SurveyMonkey, Dave. It's no biggie.
No, I should, but the reason why I was asking this after the convention is the way
I don't understand the mentality of not wanting to know, even creatively. I just don't understand why you wouldn't want to know that.
Well,
for an immature comic, I think it's dangerous. I think you start to especially if it's an immature comic, because you don't have a really good your readership hasn't gelled yet at that point either, and so you might get.
I thought you were calling me an immature comic. That's funny.
No, no, no. You're just you're an immature creator. No, if you've got an immature comic and your work, you've just been doing this for a couple of years, I don't think you want to start getting into that mindset. You've got it. You've got a readership that hasn't solidified yet, and you get this idea in your head that 15-year-old girls like your strip. And I'm not saying that that's what happened to Scott, but I'm for a beginner. If you get this idea into your head that a certain demographic digs your strip and you start that leads you.
Sure, but I mean, I don't think there's any point in taking a demographic survey of 100 people anyway. I think it would be difficult.
The numbers are so low, yeah.
Yeah, so the numbers are so low, the data means nothing. So.
Well, then we agree.
Yeah.
But so, well, let me tell you.
No.
Is it so bad to agree with me? We agree.
What I'm saying is that by the time it's time to take a survey, I think that it's important to know. So, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think it's going to. I just don't think it's going to hurt to know who you're talking to. I don't know why it would be good for someone to say. That would be like if you're at a con and someone comes up and they're like, "Hi, my name is," and you go, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't tell me. I'm not looking right at you. Just leave here."
That's not it at all. I'm saying if you've got if you're just starting out in your webcomic, there are other things that you should be paying attention to long before taking a poll of who your readers are, especially as you just said. You don't have a whole lot of readers at that point anyway.
Well, here's a different way to look at it. Before you listen to who your readers are, you're still, if it's immature, you still have to be listening to what your, and this is going to sound cheesy, but what your creative heart is telling you before you're listening to the people that are coming. You know what I mean? Like, you're still figuring out your world, so rather than look out to who's coming to read that world, you really got to let yourself live in it and swim in it and then figure out a year or so in or 2 years in who's coming to check it out. You know, I think that's what you're saying, right, Brad?
Yeah,
you've got to really.
But
let yourself
it's important
the world.
That Brad knows that I did not agree with him yet.
So okay, but I want to tell you guys I've never taken a demographic survey. Here's I want to tell you guys how I do my survey, and this is a terrible sample because it's convention based, and we all know that if you try to take a sample of humanity based on conventions, you're really sorely reading humanity wrong. But and that's enough to say about that. But at conventions, I'm a pretty good reader of people. I can tell people right away, and I know that Sheldon readers tend to be a little bit older, although they tend to run. Now I was gonna say they tend to run older, but no, they do go all ages. But they tend to be. The joke I always make with Brad is that it's like, "Oh, woman in a comfortable sweater, Sheldon reader."
Your readers are kind of easy to pick out. I mean, and I think if you do that poll, I'm going to bet that you skew a little bit female.
Hmm. Yeah, they do. I would imagine I'm either 55-45 female or 60-40 female, something like that. But it's mm-hmm. funny how at conventions and Scott, I think we've only exhibited once or twice together, but Brad and I have gotten expert at picking out each other's readers. Like, I see guy with an he's maybe 40 with an extra 20 pounds on him, and he's got a Sinestro shirt on. I'm like, bam, Evil Ink reader. Brad's like, oh, a woman with nurse's shoes on. Oh, Dave, here comes a Sheldon reader.
I've gotten to the point where I just grab a stack of Dave's flyers, because a lot of times I'll be standing on Dave's left. And I'll just grab a stack of his flyers and have them ready, because if they're coming by my way and I'm going to get them first, you know, I just get the flyer in their hand, because 9 chances out of 10, you can see him walking down the street. You know, he's got Kellett written all over him.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's interesting. And I don't know. But Brad, haven't you ever cracked up when every once in a while this has happened? It happened at Emerald City Comic Con. I will get this guy, Scott, who will come up and he'll be like 300 pounds, all muscle, sleeveless, but just tats all down the arm, like a nose ring, nipple rings, clearly
he's got the tattoo of the teardrop because he killed a guy.
Right. And he's got a shiv mark. He's got a shiv mark between his third and fourth rib cage. And he comes up and he's like, oh, I got to tell you know what my favorite part is? When the duck is sitting on his butt. Oh, I love that part. That's the best part. Oh, I got to buy it. I got to get all 5 of these books. Oh, God, this is great stuff. And you're like,
hey,
really?
Can you make And then, you know, it's funny because he's a fan and everything, but he's not a fan. I mean, he is a fan, but he's not your everyday fan. So when he says, you know, can you break a 50? It's like, oh my God, I'm going to break that 50.
Yeah.
Whatever you say, sir, I'm going to find a way to break that 50.
But what's interesting about that guy as a reader is, like, he'll buy the Sheldon books, but then he won't be seen walking around the convention with them. He'll tuck them under his heavy metal purchase, you know? Like, he's got them under his European hardcore comics.
He's got the sketch of Power Girl facing out. He's got Sheldon facing in.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got to be on a Playboy.
Yeah,
That's right.
He's got to maintain that image. But anyway, so that's another way to check out your demographics is just pay close attention to the audience that comes up to you in a convention because it's sometimes very telling and sometimes very surprising who you'll attract. So that's enough about that.
So, that's another. Well, no, I'm going to put a tag on that. We always advise people to take pictures of your fans holding your books when they buy them at conventions. There's another good reason to do that too, because when you're in the moment, you're not really paying attention that much to faces. You know, especially after you've done them a while. People come up to me at a convention and say, "Do you remember me? I was at SPX last year," and I've got to, you know, sometimes fake it and go, "Oh yeah, I remember you." But a lot of times, sometimes I don't.
What are you going to be like? It's like, oh, got to do SPX. All right. And you go through this little box and you can pull up SPX 2007. You're going, and you're doing the cards. You're looking at flash cards, the photos. Okay. Big guy. Woman, kids.
You are being contentious, my God.
What?
You're being contentious. No,
contentious.
You're not funny, sir.
I do love the idea. I do love the idea that Brad and his wife are up late at night and she's holding up a card and he goes, wait, don't say it. Jim. All right, hold on. Susan, she has a cat named Mrs.
Susan. Book four in a sketch.
Like he's written down what they bought the previous year. Ask her about her goiter. Okay, ask her about how that's doing.
Goiter. Yeah.
So, but here's my point. You're in the moment. You're not paying attention. When you go back and look at those photos later, when you get home, you start to see some patterns among the people that have come to get your comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not pretty.
Well, that's why I say conventions are not the best sample of humanity, but you get the idea.
Oh.
Oh, gosh. Did you both just go, at the same time?
I think we might have.
Oh, my gosh.
Next
question.
Conventions, everybody. Am I right? Come on. Who's with me? Well,
okay,
you know what? Before we go too far, because Baltimore Comic Con, I do want to say this, because I unfortunately didn't get to meet Mark Nathan, and I felt bad about that. But they put on a very nice show at Baltimore Comic Con, and I want to thank them for that.
Heck, yeah, they did.
That was a great convention, and I'm sorry, Mark, that I didn't get to meet you and to thank you, but it was a great show. That is that.
Easily one of the best conventions of the year. Scott, don't you have a good story from Baltimore?
Do I? Oh, God. Yes, I have a good story from Baltimore, but do we want to tell it? We're running out of time. You sure? Maybe we could take another question.
What's the story?
So Chris and I get off the plane. We flew together, and we get off the plane, and we come down to the baggage claim. And there's a girl in the Baltimore Comic Con shirt. They all wore these nice red polos, and they were doing airport pickups. And we come right off of the plane, and sure enough, there's a young girl, straight dark hair and real sweet, and she comes by and she says, "Oh, Mr. Kurtz, you know, Mr. Straub." She knew who we were. We had your flight info, and we're all meeting downstairs at the baggage. Take your time, get your bags, and we're outside. So we get our bags, and we go outside, and she brings us over to this spot, and then the van pulls up, and the van had to drive a little bit further, and she goes, "God, I'm sorry. We're going to have to go over here." And Chris and I are like, "Well, it's a big deal. It's 5 feet. It's no problem." So we walk, you know, the 5 feet, and they start loading all these people that had been there before us into it, and we realize pretty quickly that the people there, plus all their bags, there's no way we're fitting. So Chris and I turn to this girl and say, hey, listen, we're going to get a cab. And she goes, oh, no. There'll be another van back around. Or maybe I could arrange something. I'd hate for you to have to wait here. And we're like, it's no big deal. We were going to take – we didn't even know you were going to be here. We were going to take a van anyway or a cab anyway. So we get in the cab and we – you know. And she apologizes. I mean, terribly sorry. Didn't need to apologize. And, you know, we get there and she was at the hotel and she asked if everything was fine and everything was great. She was, you know, they were doing pickups. So the next day we get to the con. Chris and I walk up first before you and before Dave and Brad get there. Walk up to the get our badges. My badge is there, completely printed out. No badge for anybody else. No badge for Dave. No badge for Brad or Chris. Nothing. And so I said to her, well, that scares me. And she said, oh, there's no problem. We'll make them badges right now. They're supposed to be here. And I said, yeah, but this makes me nervous that maybe we don't have the table space that I thought we did. Because if the fact is that nobody expected three extra people, they may not have given us two extra table or an extra table. So she says, Scott, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can find it out for you. So if you just go out here and go around to where we know your booth is, I will run through here because we had to go around, but they could go through. And I will beat you there and make sure that I'll find out who I need to talk to. And I said, I really appreciate it. If that's not your job, you don't have to. And she goes, if it's not my job, I'll call someone whose job it is. But she's the nicest person in the whole world. So we walk outside and we're turning the corner, and I said to Chris, that is the nicest woman I've ever met. I mean, without a doubt, nicest woman I've ever met. And Chris goes, yeah, now don't you feel bad for arguing with her on the internet? And I said, what are you talking about? I didn't argue with her. Who is she? And he goes, that's Johanna Draper Carlson. That's the girl that you got into that huge fight with about the criticism of the book. And I'm like, no, it is not. And he's like, well, it's been on her badge for the last 2 days. Did you not notice it? And I said, stop it. That is not funny. And he goes, that is Johanna Draper Carlson. I'm like, stop it. You shut up. You shut your mouth. And he said, I'm not kidding. So we're walking, and we're walking silently, and I look at him, and he goes, what? And I go, are you serious? You were not shitting me. And he stops, and he turns to me, and he goes, Scott, that was Johanna Draper Carlson. That is the girl. And I said, why is she being so nice to me? And he goes, why wouldn't she? And I go, what is her angle? Why is she being so nice to me?
So suspicious.
And she knows who I am. So I'm like, I was a shrinking violet. I just could not believe it. I mean, had bent over backwards to be so nice to me. And I said to Chris, she should have like punched me in the nuts. She should have walked right up to me at the airport and been like, Mr. Kurtz? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, this is from Comics Worth Reading. Clang.
Clang.
You know, and so I just didn't know what to do. So the very next night, Saturday night, that night, we're at the Harvey's.
Yeah.
And we walk up, and she's got our badges. And you were there for that, Brad.
Yeah.
And she gives us the badges, and she apologizes because our badges were Scott Kurtz, Scott Kurtz, and Scott Kurtz. And she apologizes again, and I turn around and I tell Brad that story, and I realize I'm presenting, and I don't know when to go up, what to say, what do I do, what's my cue, how will I know, what are the rules? So I go back and I said, hey, listen, I apologize. I'm presenting tonight. I have no idea when I'm supposed to go up, where am I supposed to sit. And she's like, oh, I was going to come over and tell you all that, but I also wanted to come over and pull you aside and let you know that I am Johanna, and I just wanted you to know that I wasn't not telling you that as some kind of thing. Like I was – it's just that I have two separate lives. There's my life on the internet and my life for the show, and when I'm at the show, I'm supposed to serve you guys, and that's my job. And so I haven't brought it up because, you know, my job is to make sure you're taken care of. And this really felt like the first opportunity where it's safe to come over and say, I'm Johanna. And obviously you would have noticed by now. And I just didn't want you to think that I wasn't saying anything. And I didn't know what to say. So I said to her, I talked to you for 2 days and I did not even notice your name tag. I'm a horrible human being. I mean, your name's right in front of me. I'm not even looking at your name tag. It's like I don't even care what your name is. What's your name? Badges. Give me. Ride to the airport. Get me there. You know. So anyway, Johanna Carlton Draper Carlson. I should probably learn her name. Still now, I don't know it.
That every time.
she's the woman's got three names, and I don't know which order they go in. But sweetest lady on the planet. There was absolutely no reason at all for her to be as nice as she was to me. But Brad turns to me that night, and it's like he was channeling my father, and turns to me with that, you know, chin down but eyes looking up at me. He says, you know, you should really mention her on the podcast. Should really make a point to let the world know how nice she was.
Because she was not only she came back and she talked to all of us, and she's a really nice, very articulate woman, and I'm not articulate, but not only that, but Scott, she came over and got a sketch done by you, didn't she?
Came by and asked for a sketch of the Savage Critic the next day and giggled as I drew it.
She was extremely nice to all four of us, though.
The funny thing is that as she was waiting, she had gotten the sketch from me, and then she had stepped over to talk to you guys, stepped to the left to talk to Brad and Dave. And as that happened, Tom Brevoort came over from Marvel and was like, I just wanted to say that I really like the way you gave to that chick online about that criticism.
Your point, not good right now.
Yep.
Tom, I will
no
talk
need.
To you later.
Hello.
I didn't hear that part of the story.
No, really?
And really? This is the first I'm hearing of it. That's what he came over to talk to you about?
Well, I know Tom, and we talk about a lot of things all the time. And, you know, we talk about Ringo, and we talk about Marvel, and we talk about, I mean, comics. But he came over and... Well, girls, there's a reason why it's the first time you've heard that story, is because I don't need to tell you that story because you'd giggle at it. I'm sitting over here, guys, in my peanut gallery listening to me do the podcast. Ashley and my wife and my sister-in-law. No, they're sitting over. I'm doing the podcast, and they're over there going, why haven't I heard this story? And Angie's like, I don't know. How come I haven't heard this story? Okay.
The best part is TV is off. They both have popcorn. They're like,
oh no, they're listening to me do the podcast. They should watch TV. But anyway. Now they're going to, go watch Torchwood and leave me alone. No, Tom came over and we were talking, and then after, you know, the pleasantries and stuff, he goes, by the way, I really like your post about criticism because, you know, a lot of these guys come online, they do a blog, and they think they're journalists. And I'm like, blogging is fun. I like it. It's okay.
Tom, we've got to catch up sometime else. This has been fantastic.
Yeah. Please, no. So there. I'm glad you enjoyed that story. So, Johanna, you were the sweetheart, and everyone, and she even was like, you know, I learned a lot from that whole experience, and I'm sure you learned stuff too. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and listen, one other.
Why are you laughing at that, Brad?
Just the way you said that. But oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, you don't expect me to actually change my mind about it, do you?
I've argued with you long enough to know that you're not going to change your mind.
She truly is a sweetheart, but that doesn't mean that I agree with her.
I'll tell you what we can all agree with. The top quality of Scrooge McDuck's comics sweeping the Harvey this year.
Oh, my God. No kidding.
How is it that Scrooge McDuck gets nominated for Harvey in every single category?
I will explain it.
I've never seen corporate placement as blatant as that as far as, all right, everybody, here's your vote.
I will explain it to you, okay? The Harvey Awards are a less popular award. So in order to receive a nomination, you need a certain percentage of the vote, right? Obviously. So you need a high percentage of people voting for you to be nominated in a certain category. So if you consider that, let's say, this used to happen a lot with the Ignatz Award with Fantagraphics, because at the Harveys or at the Ignatz Awards, who's going to nominate a Marvel book? Because there's not a lot of Marvel people at the SPX, but there's a ton of Fantagraphics people there, and they get everyone that works there. People at Fantagraphics will be every one of their professionals vote for this, vote for this, vote for this, and that's. And they all count because they're all professional votes, and they mobilize, and it gets nominated. And, it's kind of harder with the Eisners or something because there's so many people nominating different books from different companies. But when you talk about some of the smaller awards, mm-hmm. It doesn't take that many votes to get nominated. Because there's just not that many people interested.
And it was pretty clear. And I really noticed it because we were sitting with Image. That, of course, Image is not going to have a lot of nominations because it's all independent guys who think freely for themselves. They're not on a corporate payroll, you know. So, of course, the Image books aren't going to get nominated. I thought that was like a pretty blatant sign of what was going on. It was like, well, Dark Horse is in every category. Oh, Scrooge McDuck is in every category. Oh, Superman is in, and there's three tables of DC guys sitting there. It's like, well, this is hard to figure out how this happened.
So then you have Baltimore. All right, now the Harveys are being held in Baltimore, and that is a Steve Jeppy town. And Steve Jeppy is the guy that owns Diamond, and Diamond owns Gemstone Publishing. Get it? Diamond, Gemstone?
Oh.
And Steve Jeppy owns the company that publishes those Scrooge McDuck books. And he is he practically owns all of Baltimore, or part of Baltimore. So Steve Jeppy's got the comic book – Steve Jeppy Comic Book Museum in Baltimore. He lives there. So it's the award in his town, in a company that – he can mobilize a lot of people to vote for him of comic professionals.
I just realized this is a Scrooge McDuck town, kid. You want to play, you got to play Scrooge McDuck's way.
Please, Mr. Jeppy, I just want to count my comics for the day and go home.
No. No, it's a Scrooge McDuck town, kid.
Yeah. Not until you make your nominated vote for the hobby.
Throw your money on the pile so Scrooge can roll around on it. There you go. That's it. I just like that this is a Scrooge McDuck town, kid.
Oh, talk about someone has posted a picture of a poor soul at the Baltimore Comic Con who went to one of the panels, and when he sat down, his butt crack was visible through the chair. And someone took a picture of it, and it's on the net. Whoever did that, boo on you.
That person?
Boo on you.
So, Baltimore. But I thought overall the show was very fun, and I would recommend it to anyone going.
No, it was a blast. Dangerous city, though.
Oh, boy. I didn't find that out until after I left, pretty much.
Very dangerous city.
I realize we're all stumbling down to look for a chocolate shake at 2 in the morning in Baltimore. In the meantime, like, everyone's getting mugged around us, and we're like...
Yeah, that was funny because Scott Sava kept looking at me. I'm like, you want to go? And he's like, yeah, and I ain't going back alone.
Meanwhile, the three of us were like, yay, chocolate shake, 3 in the morning, let's go get some pie, whatever it was. And Scott's like, really? You guys are going out?
Did somebody get mugged?
No, but Brad, it's Baltimore. And so as we found out later, it's like the second highest crime rate in America. And we're like,
Dave's like, we're sitting in that bar, and Dave goes, so what is Baltimore known for? Like, what's its main export? And we're all like, what? Who cares? Why are you asking? He's like, oh, I'm going to look it up on my iPhone. And then he turns to me and he goes, crime. Apparently Baltimore's number one export is crime.
All right. So
Britain is fine. It's when that sun goes down.
I know. It becomes an Anne Rice novel, that town, after the sun goes down.
It was an Anne Rice novel. What about when we were walking back from the Inner Harbor? And there was literally a motorcycle gang terrorizing Lombard Street.
And that one guy that was going through the red lights.
Yeah. It was like a bad John Hughes movie.
I just remember when I first check into the room, and then Brad shows up, and you know, I'm giving Brad the "hey, I haven't seen you in a couple months" hug kind of thing, and as we're talking, there's one siren going on in the background. Oh, there's another one. Oh, and within the course of like a 10-minute phone conversation in a hotel room, like 59 cop cars went flying by with their lights blazing. I was like, "Well, Brad, welcome to Baltimore. What a lovely town. We're going to be killed."
Well, you know, I think there's something else that happened there too, and I realized, I guess, how urban I am, because you guys really need to learn a little bit about walking through the city in terms of not making eye contact. And if a couple people that looks like maybe they haven't bathed since the Carter administration ask you where the shelter is, the correct answer is nothing. You keep walking. You don't stop and talk to those people. You don't know where the shelter is.
I know. I realized, Brad, no, I realized.
I remember looking back and seeing the three of you guys standing there talking. I'm like, the hell, blow them off already. You don't know where the shelter is.
I tell you what, I'm glad that you said that, because I felt really guilty. Because what happened is you walked right by, Brad. You walked right by.
No eye contact.
No, Brad's not stopping for anything. Brad almost knocked the woman over. Yawn. Okay, so this guy walks by, and this he looks like I don't know, Toothless Joe, and he's got a woman that probably was 35, but looked like she was about 64. Okay, she had like burlap sack skin, and she's pulled her hair back, but like the top layer of her hair has come out of the ponytail. And has just made of like a fro, a secondary hairstyle of a fro. They're both wearing like members only jackets.
Yeah.
And they walk straight. They beeline straight for Chris and me. And they say, "Do you guys know any place around the city?" And now at this point, the question could be anything, where we can get good seafood, or where we could, you know, where we could find a shelter where they'll let a man and a woman stay at the same time, because we're just getting all these looks, and people are looking at us like we're not even human.
Oh.
And they're just laughing at us. And I immediately became scared, and my response was, "Yeah, well," and then I walk off.
I guess that makes me a little than heartless, but you know what? The fact.
What are you looking at me like that for? It was immediately after the second sentence, it was immediately apparent it was a complete act. They weren't looking for – they didn't need a shelter. There was – like they were like, "Well, we just arrived here from Virginia, and we don't even know where there's a shelter." How would you get here from Virginia?
None of the stories ever stacked.
None of the stories – right. And, Brad, and I immediately started like feeling – like, I mean, I abandoned Chris. He could have pulled a knife and killed Chris. I was walking. And I catch up with Brad, and Brad looks at me, and he just shakes his head, and I'm thinking, oh, he heard what I said, and he's judging me. Like, he heard me go, "Yeah, well, you look kind of scary, you know." And he's gonna look at me like, "Scott, you heartless bastard. Those people needed money or tuna or possibly cat food, and you wouldn't give them anything." And Brad looks at me and goes, "They're always lying. They're always lying." I don't know why you even stopped.
I like how Captain Midwest, though, you put the city in him, and he's like, "Oh, I will shiv you as much as talk to you."
I'm sorry. I mean, I know that makes me cold, and I know that there's probably a good number of people out there who really need help.
It just makes me from Philly.
In a major urban area like Philadelphia or Baltimore, there are lots of places where if you're on the street, there are action committees, there are church groups. There are government agencies, and if you're on the street in a situation like that, I'm sure that it doesn't take too long before you figure out where the shelters are.
Yeah, Brad goes,
been on the street for a long time.
Brad turns to me and goes, "Scott,
I've been on the street for a long time. Know where the shelters are."
Believe me, Scott, they know where the shelters are, and if they don't, they can find out in like 30 minutes. But seriously.
I'm sorry. And you know, you cannot get hung up in that, because every time it's a story that never adds up. And sometimes you can get seriously hurt by sticking around long enough to get into conversation.
Especially
and
in Baltimore.
That's
you're right.
Just
you're
what
right.
it is.
Well, see, Brad,
so
my
I know that makes me cold, but
no,
that's just
no.
where I
You're right. Listen, the urban experience I have is L.A., which is like ultimate car culture. Like, you never interact with other human beings. You know what I mean? Like, you're in your car the entire time. And the only other urban setting I've ever lived in is London. And London, by any American standards, has a pretty good social network. So, like, and there's no guns. So you always sort of figure, the worst that's going to happen to me is I'll get shivved. You know, like, you're never really afraid, or at least as an American, I was never afraid in London. So I am stupidly naive when it comes to a city like Baltimore when I'm in Detroit or something. I'm always like, blue skies smiling at me, nothing but blue skies. You know, and it's like, I should be a little bit more savvy, and I'm not.
Well, I got to share this with you. It cracks me up that you were scared to take the regional rail because you heard that there had been some muggings, because that's pretty much how I take my kids to school every day these days.
Regional rail.
Regional rail. And we love it. You know, clearly, in any kind of a city setting, you do have to keep your head up and your eyes open, know what's going on. But, we love – both my kids are train nuts. So we decided we were going to start, this was going to be something we were going to try to save some gas, and maybe we could work it out so that it would be a little bit more efficient for us. And – the kids look forward to going to school every morning because we get to ride trains. And then a couple of days, there's a trolley ride going in there. You know, it's a great thing, but I had to stick her to myself that Dave's like, I don't know, I heard there's been some muggings on the train. I'm gonna take the pack back.
Before we wrap up, I'd tell you this one funny story, Brad, that you don't know about. So the last day of the show, we walk back from the Inner Harbor. Dave's already gone home. We went and had sushi at the Inner Harbor, and we're walking back. And so far
I've been there for all of that.
Yeah. And then on the way back, there's that biker gang.
Right.
Right. Terrorizing the neighborhood. Just driving down, what was that, Lombard Street? I don't remember. And just driving up on the sidewalk and through the walking areas of the buildings and running red lights and hooting and hollering. And every 5 minutes, Brad just looks at me with this, no eye contact. That's what I told you. See? Another example of why you never make eye contact. So we get to the halfway mark, which is the Days Inn. And that is where Brad is staying. Chris has boxes at Brad's hotel. We are staying at the Marriott, which is between the Inner Harbor and the Marriott. The halfway mark is the Days Inn. So I have another 2.5 blocks to walk to get to my hotel. Chris says, all right, I'm going to go in here, get my boxes, put them in Brad's car. He's going to drive them back to his place and ship them back to me. And then I'll hang out a little bit with these guys, with Malky and these guys. Then I'll end up back at the hotel. And I said, well, I'm going to go back. I'm tired. We got to be up tomorrow at 8 a.m. for our flight. So I will see you later. Say goodbye to Brad. Say goodbye to everybody. And I start walking. Between the Days Inn and the end of the pub next to the Days Inn, night fell. All right, it went from dusk to pitch black.
It went from chapter 10 to chapter 11.
Yeah, I mean, immediately it was like it was daytime. I turned around and they're all gone, and I got two blocks, and I realized it is the dead of night. and I'm like, oh crap! And I'm looking at both sides of the street, and none are well lit. Nothing is well lit. Everything is closed. All the businesses are gone. All the pubs are empty and boarded up. And I'm like, crap. And I started walking, and it seems like in every nook and gutter and alley are just people walking and pacing and watching me. And I'm thinking to myself, as I'm walking at a brisk pace and I'm puffing, you know, keeping a nice, you know, nice walker's puff as I walk, I'm thinking to myself, these people can smell. They're smelling fear on me. They know Fatty ain't running. They know I'm not. They know I'm not gonna be able to get away. They know I'm struggling. So I'm doing that thing where just whistle while you walk. Learned it on Electric Company. Just keep whistling. That'll make the ghost go away. So make it to the Marriott. Get upstairs. Shut up, Brad. At midnight, I zonk out, right? Shot a bourbon and ER on TNT, and I'm out. Set a wake-up call for 8 a.m., okay? Woke up in a start at 4:35. Oh, Charlie's Angels, huh? Look at the alarm clock. It's 4:30 in the morning. Chris's bed is empty. And I start to lose it.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what? So I'm trying to wake myself up. I turn the lights on, and, yeah, his bed is empty. His bag has not been packed. It's 4:35 a.m., and I'm thinking, oh, crap. Did he, like, walk a box? Because he was like, I'll just walk the box from the Days Inn up to – if there's no room in his car, I'll just walk the box up to the Marriott. I'm like, why would you carry a box? He goes, nah, it's two blocks. So in my head, it's like he's walking – two blocks with a box, and one of those homeless people are like, that looks like something I could sleep on. And and the Chuds get them. You know, the Baltimore Chuds have them down in the sewers. I'm sending him text messages. I'm calling. I'm getting his voicemail. And after 10 minutes, I'm starting to panic. Like, do I just go back to sleep? Or do I call someone? Like, do I call Erica? Do I call Brad? Do I wake Brad up and ask Brad when was the last time he saw Chris? You know, because now I'm kind of scared.
Yeah.
Do I call Angie? What do I do? And then I get a text immediately as I'm about to dial the phone and call you, Brad, and say, when was the last time you saw Chris, and wake you up? And it's like, hey, I'm downstairs. I've been downstairs for since like 10 minutes after we saw you, and we're just drinking.
what a nice day in Moa there. That was good.
But I mean, oh, man. And then my text back was, well, the alarm's going off at 8. Like some school marm.
You're like a mad parent. We are going to have a discussion when you get up to the hotel room, young man.
Oh, man.
We are going to have a chat. This is not acceptable.
We're going to have a serious chat when you sober up, mister.
Yeah.
You know what? It's a bummer. We didn't even get to talk about my favorite part of all of Baltimore Comic Con. I was because it was such a great runner the whole show. Was the Barefoot Hobbits? Oh God, that cracked me up all weekend.
Come on, you know you're dying to do it.
I want to do it so bad.
Do it. Come on, you know.
So we got started at the panel that we did, but we started talking about this Southern woman who, having watched The Lord of the Rings, starts going, well, I like the movie, but them there hobbits, they ain't got no shoes on. That just ain't right. Them hobbits are going to get all sorts of trouble. They're walking through the mines of Moria. They're walking through all sorts of battles and rocks and stones. They're gonna get cuts. They're gonna get tetanus. They're gonna get tapeworm. It's gonna be all sorts of trouble. Forget them ring of powers. You're going to have ringworm. That's the problem right there. And
you know what makes it so good? It's funny, but I'm just picturing the self-satisfied smile on Dave's face over there.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just
looking over at Gloria. I got him to do it again.
Oh, God.
And everyone that wants a little more of this, and then we'll wrap it up, should go to StarSlip and see Strablated Slipcast with his footage from the Baltimore Con.
Yeah.
The way that Slipcast ends is classic.
Oh, God, that is funny.
The look on Brad's face when David goes, Vulcans can commit crimes. They're crimes of logic.
I remember hearing that and just going, what the hell is he talking about?
You gave him the same look that my dad gives me when I say, oh, sure, Dad, well, you know, all the liberals are bad. It should just be a one party. The liberals don't want to turn the country socialistic, all right? They're not out to make it socialist. And that look is the look of me.
you get the same Vulcan look. That's nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've talked quite enough. This has been Webcomics Weekly. We at least answered one question. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you know what? 20 minutes of content and then 20 minutes of talking about how you shouldn't make eye contact with people in public spaces. So that's good.
Now, is this going to be what you guys talk about down south?
Yeah. This is a nice segue, Brad.
Good job,
Brad. See how I did that?
You're very smooth. So for the two people that have listened an hour and a half into the show now, we should probably mention Scott and I will be giving a talk in Savannah on October – what date is it, Scott? Do you know? Hold on. Let me look it up real quick. I think it's the 14th.
The 14th.
Is it the 14th?
And it's free to the public too, so you don't have to – be a student to go to the talk.
Right. It's at Trustees Theater, which I guess if you're in or around Savannah is a big theater and you'll know it. But it's free. It's at 8 p.m. Here, I just found it. It's at 8 p.m. on October 14th. And we'll be signing and sketching and giving out high fives and stuff after the talk. So come on.
But definitely come because it's going to be collegiate.
It is going to be collegiate. I'm excited. I hope this is the first of it. And you know what? If you happen to be a student and you want all or some or most of Half Pixel to come out, we are happy to give talks, just FYI.
Any college.
Any college, really. Listen to me. I'm like, any college. You got an auto repair college? We'll come talk. We do not care. What do you got? What do you got? ITT? We're there. We'll be there next week.
College. We'll do anything.
Typing? We'll come out and talk to you. Sure. Whatever you need.
Hey, seminary.
Seminary.
Because I want to hear you guys being collegiate, so make sure you tape it if you get a chance.
Well, Brad,
we'll find a way to tape it.
We actually don't own the talk, though, Brad, unfortunately. So we can't air
really?
It. Yeah, we can't air it.
Really?
Yeah, they will own the talk.
Interesting.
Oh, is there going to be somebody doing sign language there?
But you know what this tells me, Brad? This also tells me that Scott did not read the contract that he signed.
Hey, not only haven't I read it, I have not mailed it back.
Nice.
Still sitting on my desk.
Nice. Good work, my friend. Solid.
That will be overnighted tomorrow. They will have – I might arrive before the contract. Just hand deliver it. Is that bad form?
to hand deliver the contract?
Hand deliver the contract.
So I think this is good. This is next week's episode of Webcomics Weekly is how you should not sign or return contracts until the actual event day thereof.
If you wait long enough – and they've already planned the event, they will let you do it without the contract.
Can you imagine you fly in, you're like staying at the place, you go up on stage and you're like, and now please welcome to the stage, just Dave Kellett. You're like, oh, dang it, I should have mailed that in.
Oh.
Oh, man. Oh, nerds.
Nerds? Did you say you nerds?
Nerds, yeah. But anyway, I also – this is a wonderful thing, Brad, because we've talked about this before for conventions. You know how with the age-old problem of how many books do you bring? I have absolutely no idea how many books to bring to this thing.
And we have no clue.
Because the theater seats 1,100 people, but there's no way in heck we're going to fill that, I'm imagining. So
filling 1,100 would be ambitious, yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's no way.
We'll get 500, I wouldn't even think. We'll probably have the students that are interested, which is probably a few hundred students at best, I would think.
So what are you thinking, like 200 books?
No, you know what I mailed? I only brought 20 of each book, so I have 5 books. What is that?
Do you already mail books to
I only brought 100 books. No, I brought 120 books, I guess.
Whoa. Hold on.
Yeah, I already mailed them.
Hold on. Are you mailed books already?
Yes, last week.
Are you talking about how to make webcomic books, or did you mail, like, your Sheldon books?
I mailed 25 How to Make Webcomics books, and I think 20 each of all 5 Sheldon books.
So I should mail more How to Make Webcomic books.
Well, I was going to call you, yes, and I forgot to do that. Shoot. Yes. Well, I'm going to bring some in my luggage.
But where are you shipping them to? I don't understand. Are you shipping them
to SCAD. No, not to the bed and breakfast, but to SCAD.
You guys are being put up in a bed and breakfast?
Hey-o.
We are. Hello.
Bed and breakfast.
Now he's mad.
Now I'm jealous.
I don't know. Whatever it's called. It's called the
Magnolia something.
Yeah, something like that. Magnolia Hall. I wasn't going to say the name of it in case someone wants to come kill us.
Oh, God. Now what have I done? What have I done?
I'll cut this out of the show. One thing is, are you mailing it to the hotel, or did you mail it to SCAD?
I mailed it to SCAD and just told them.
Where did you mail it to?
I'll email you later.
Okay. Like I said, I didn't read the contract.
Here's the answer. 25 of your personal books, 100 total of the How to Make Webcomics book.
Oh, wait a minute.
You think 100 total? Yep. All right. Then I got to bring another 25, and Scott's got to bring 50.
Okay, I'll mail 50.
Sounds good.
But I don't want to bring any of my own books.
Why not?
I got so many of them. No one's going to buy them.
I got 5. I only brought 20 of each. That's fine. If I have to mail back 15 or 20, that's fine.
How many books do you have? How many volumes?
5. So I brought 20 of each.
Wait a minute. You have Sheldon book 1 through 5.
No, I have Sheldon book 1 through 4, and then I have that Pug special edition thing.
Wow, so you have 5 books too, and you brought 20 of each.
Yeah, 20 is not too many of each individual book.
That's what I brought to Baltimore.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd you do?
I brought a little bit home.
Oh. Well, maybe I mailed too many. I don't know. This is what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't know how many to bring to these things.
All right. It's better to have too much than to not have
enough. I look at this as the opportunity cost. To media mail a box of books is $13 if it's 40 pounds of books. And I sell one book, and that covers the whole box. So,
right, but you media mailed a long time ago. I'm mailing stuff tomorrow, pal.
You're priority mailing it the day before you fly out.
Yeah.
Along with the contract. Scott Kurtz, everybody. Scott Kurtz.
Yeah, sneak that in.
I hate you.
Scott went all silent. Oh, come on. Come on. Well, Scott, this is the thing, is normally I would fly with it, but I'm bringing Wifey Sweets and the little one. And so
what do you mean you would fly with it? You would bring a box with you on the plane?
Yeah, I would just throw a box in my checked bags.
Oh. Yeah, I guess we could do that. God, that's a heavy bag.
Yeah, it's only 40 pounds. The limit is 50 on most airlines.
Yeah, all right. I'll consider it.
Web Comics Weekly.
Last half hour has been useless to everybody that's not Scott or I.
I guarantee you everybody that listens to this podcast is going to love it. That's the Scott Kurtz guarantee.
Cut to me, Brad, flying back with 125 books. Going grumbledy, grumbledy, grumbledy.
The best part about SCAD is if I don't sell one book, I'm still getting paid.
Yeah, that's what I figured. The opportunity cost is good enough where why not mail out 120 books, 130
yeah.
bucks?
All right. Webcomics Weekly.
Out.
Oh, no. Where's my record button? Uh-oh, that's a trouble.
Oh,
I hope someone else is... Hope someone else has been recording.
I was recording the whole thing.
Oh, no, it's still... Okay, never mind. Well, I'm going to cut this part out because it was right here. It was hidden under a bunch of windows.
I'm going to stop recording.